This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne on KYKN. Thank you for spending your noontime with us. We are talking about local issues every noon to 1 o'clock every weekday. So it's another fabulous day in the Mid-Willamette Valley, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not bad.
So we have a very interesting guest today. And we're going to talk a lot about small business. Small business in Oregon, small business in the nation, small business interests at the state capitol. How politics plays out, how partisanship plays out, and what the governor's speech had to do with it. So, yeah, all some of my favorite topics. So hang with us here. We have, in the studio with us today, we have Anthony Smith, Anthony K. Smith. He's with NFIB. That's NFIB, in case I say it too many times too quickly. So welcome, Anthony.
Thank you, Brent. Happy to be here.
So NFIB stands for?
The National Federation of Independent Business.
I did know that. There were so many things I was thinking about I could make up this NFIB stands for. But at any rate, Anthony's an Oregonian, went to Oregon State, go Beavers.
That's right.
Uh-huh. And lives in Salem. So we like to talk to with people that are invested in the community and live in the community, and they're making things happen in the community, good and preferably not bad. And, you've got an interesting job because it does intersect with politics.
That's right.
And it intersects with the private sector in that how people are making a living and paying the mortgage and paying their employees and providing benefits and creating jobs and all of those great things that business does. And then the things that happen to them when it comes to regulations and taxes.
Yeah, right? It's tough out there.
So NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business, is an advocacy group, one of those evil special interests, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So you have, locally, we have a Chamber of Commerce, and there's a U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Sure.
And there are very big players, as we know, in Washington, D.C., that at least purport to fight for the small business people in America, right? And you are the Oregon director.
Yes.
Right? So you're really focused on what happens in Oregon.
Yeah, Oregon issues. Yeah, we're a national organization. We're a little different than a lot of other types of associations, especially at the state level, because we are one organization. So I'm not the Oregon chapter director. I'm the Oregon state director for our national association, the NFIB. So that's different. Just in the structure of our organization is that we are one organization. So, we have a board just like every other association, but it's a national board. And then here at the state level, we have an advisory committee of members in Oregon who serve on our leadership council, and they give me direction, hold me accountable as an employee of the organization, and give me direction on the types of things that we should be asking our members about. And we certainly have a good idea about what small business owners are talking about at the local level because we have a team of membership reps that many of your listeners might have seen an NFIB representative knock on the door and ask if they're a member or if they're interested in joining our organization. So we're having conversations with business owners every day about issues that matter to them. But then we also, as a part of our governing structure, is we take those issues, the hot button issues that small business owners are talking about every day, and then we actually put it out to a vote of our members.
Yeah,
and that's
one of the
things that we do. A little different than some of the other organizations out there is it's truly a grassroots to the top type organization where we're not sitting around thinking of these great things that we want to go out and try to convince our members what they should think. It's we're listening to our members, and then we're the mouthpiece for what they're already thinking.
Yeah, I appreciate that because too often you get an advocacy group. I'm going to tell a story about my father here in a second. They think that they know best and they're going to tell their members what's what.
Right.
That drives me crazy. And we could talk the rest of the hour about the NCAA.
Right.
That they think that the colleges are somehow beholden to them instead of them working for the colleges. But that's all about it. But my father, back in the 90s, and Hillary Clinton was heavily involved in healthcare and Hillary Care and AARP All their memberships were against it, against it, against it. And then they went into the room with Hillary and they came out in favor of it and advocated for it. But it was against the wishes. And so I, even though I'm old enough to be mailed one of those cards, I know I sound incredibly youthful on the radio, but I'm old enough to have an AARP card. And there was this association that was affected by Washington politics. And they weren't doing what their dues-paying members wanted them to do. They were doing, well, we know. We're going to tell you what's good for you. And so I know I've seen in years past in FIB, it's kind of a poll where it says, how important are these issues to you?
That's right.
You know, what should be the top issue for you? Is this a 10 for you? Is this a 2 for you? And is that how you direct your resources?
Yeah. Certainly the state ballot. That's what we call our member ballot is our state ballot. And we have a federal version for federal issues. But certainly those that's what we call that the mandate from our members is what are those hot button issues. And for the state ballot, we typically ask our members at the state level anywhere between 4 or 5 questions on their annual state ballot. And then periodically throughout the year, if an issue rises, you know, during the legislation or legislative session, for example, that we don't have a member position on, then we'll go ahead and issue a special member ballot and ask, you know, our members how they feel about that particular issue. And we try to do it in a similar way that you might find on when you go and vote on a ballot measure, mm-hmm. you know, like during the November election is, you know, we give a brief description of what the issue is. Then we try to go out and find the best arguments in favor of it and then the best arguments opposed to it. And so I'm often reading, you know, from different stakeholder groups, what their position is on a certain issue. And then I'm, you know, putting it in my own language, but, you know, trying to use their best arguments to put that in front of our membership so that they can have an objective, something objective to look at and say, well, you know, here's what the people that are for it say, and here's what the people that are against it say, and here's how I feel about that issue.
Well, all right. Well, he's passionate, isn't he?
Yes.
We're talking to Anthony Smith. NFIB, want to wrap up this first segment on letting everybody know what NFIB, who the members are, where the money comes from. But we definitely want to hear from you in terms of what you thought of the governor's speech yesterday, coming into, you know, being elected and coming up sessions and years. And also how frightened we should be. And kind of one of the things we talk about is, you know, things that affect the pocketbooks of people in the Midwest Valley. And even though we have a lot of state and county and city workers that work in Salem, reside in Salem, Kaiser area, you know, there's a lot of small businesses. It's a small business state. It's a small business county. So I say small business, and that's perhaps unfair because it's independent business, NFIB.
That's right.
So real quickly, your membership is made up of people who own their own business.
Are
they non-publicly traded companies? Is that
correct?
What it is?
Really, the folks who are our members, I mean, there's really two rules, and that is you have to be for-profit and you have to be independently owned, like not traded.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you have some statistics about average or mean number of employees?
Sure, yeah. About 90% of our members have fewer than 25 employees in Oregon,
wow.
And 70% have fewer than 10 employees. Okay. So really, we're the smallest of the small businesses out there. And that's just self-selection, because as you said, we're the National Federation of Independent Business. And so, you know, if you're independently owned and operated, you can certainly be a member of NFIB, but you reach a certain size and you might go hire your own, or you might have your own in-house government relations person, or you might go out and hire, a lobbyist or someone else to represent you before the legislature. So, you know, we're the collective voice of the smallest of the small businesses in our state who maybe don't have the resources to have, you know, their own in-house staff or go out and spend a bunch of money on a high-priced lobbyist.
That's well said. You were well selected for this job.
Thank you very much, sir.
So a lot of times you have companies that are too small really to have their own HR department, and they hire it out. Right? They'll hire it out to either a payroll company, or actually there's companies that take that whole role of HR. And for you guys, exactly what you're talking about. No, they don't have the ability with smaller mom and pops or even up to 25, 50 employees of going out and affecting public policy. and testifying at the city council and at the legislature and so forth. So in a sense, by being a member, you hire the NFIB to fulfill that role.
That's right.
And if people are no members, then there's nobody looking after you. I'm a big believer in trade associations and advocacy groups. Of course, just the people the topics I want advocated for. I'm not against at all, and I think special interests as a phrase gets a negative connotation. It doesn't necessarily deserve.
So does lobbyist.
And lobbyists. Yeah. Boom, boom,
boom. Yeah. Well, we certainly think that our members are special, and the small business, you know, it's tough to be a small business person.
Yeah.
And so they really are special because somehow they make it work. No matter what we do to them, it seems like they make it work.
So, Anthony, your job is to go into the room of the legislator and come in with a bottle of bourbon and some foreign cigars, right? And start wheeling and dealing, is that how it works?
If it ever worked like that, that's not how it works anymore, you know?
All right. Well, we're going to talk about how it works. Okay. Here, hold on just a second. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Now, back to Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires in the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment is also brought to you by Kennedy Tax Solutions.
Thank you, Kennedy, and thank you to all our sponsors, actually, so we can be on the air and talking about things that are important to Salem and Kaiser and the Marion Polk County. So, and actually, tax solutions. We should probably have some tax people on,
yes.
Don't you think? That's just a shameless plug for some of our sponsors. But
absolutely.
Really, this time of year, everyone's top of mind taxes.
Yeah.
And I know I can't wait for the first time we see the effects of the Trump tax bill.
Have you been seeing it? I have.
Well, as a small business owner, some of the flow-through concepts that we really haven't filed taxes yet on the tax year that it affects.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
I'm happy to talk about that, too, because that was one of the things we were really involved in at the national level.
Oh, my gosh. That might be a whole nother hour. with us in studio, this is Brent DeHart along with Dave Bourne at Newsmakers, and with us in studio, Anthony Smith from National Federation of Independent Business, affectionately known as NFIB. Really quickly, before we start talking about the politics and such, where's your money come from? Somebody pays you a salary, I assume.
Yes.
You know, you're a talented individual. You were involved in some Senate races, right? You've been around politics and you're an educated man. Who pays you? How does that money come from?
It's our members. And yeah. I actually really like to talk about this subject because, you know, in this day and age where, you know, money and politics and kind of some skepticism and cynicism about that sort of thing, I really like to talk about the fact that we're member dues funded organization. You know, that doesn't, certainly we might have an event and we might get a sponsorship from one of our members or maybe somebody who provides us with a member benefit. But primarily, we're funded from our own members. So our members, we have 6,000 here in Oregon, 300,000 nationwide. So they have skin in the game in our organization. And really, like you said in the previous segment, they've hired us to do a job for them.
Giving you the marching orders.
That's what we do.
Okay. How would you describe in a sentence or two what the mission of NFIB is?
So our mission statement is actually to promote and protect the right of our members to own, operate, and grow their businesses. And it doesn't get much simpler than that. It's a simple statement. It's just hard to do.
Really?
Yeah.
Say that again. It's just one sentence. Say it again.
Yeah. To promote and protect the right of our members to own, operate, and grow their businesses.
Don't you wish there didn't need to be an advocacy group for that?
Right.
I've thought about that before. And you know, as funny as it seems, I would be happy to lobby and influence my way out of a job if it meant that we were going to be able to be successful in that. Unfortunately, I think I do have some job security.
So are you in a position of trying to help people get elected? Does the NFIB take a role in that?
Yeah, certainly. It's not just public policy advocacy that we do. We also get involved in elections. One of the things that we use in order to evaluate candidates for office, primarily legislative offices, mm-hmm. and then statewide elected offices, is our voting record. And that's another kind of a staple of NFIB, kind of in the same way as our member ballot is our NFIB voting record. And that's where we take a series of issues that maybe have come up before the legislature in the last 2 years, and we actually, you know, grade each legislator on the votes that they took. So some organizations call it a legislative scorecard. Mm-hmm. We call it our voting record, and then that gives our members, we mail that out to our members, and we let them know how their legislators voted on those issues.
Very nice. So there may be, you know, a couple thousand bills introduced, and there's a certain amount that NFIB have an interest interested that thinks helpful for small business or hurtful for small business.
Correct. Yeah.
You take a stance on the bills that affect you guys. Okay.
Accountability, yep. too.
And it's not a surprise to anybody. You know, I mean, I don't put anything on the voting record that it's not very clear to the legislators when I'm in the building every day that we are opposed or in favor of that piece of legislation. And honestly, in my more than 3 years on the job now, I've never got a complaint from a legislator that said something like, I can't believe you scored that vote. You know, I didn't know what your position was on it. It's pretty clear where we are on any given issue. And we're happy to disseminate that around the building.
All right. Well, our listener knows we're not exactly hard-hitting journalism here. We're conversational and informational. But, Anthony, can you tell us how the local legislators have been scoring in recent? I mean, we have a collective in this area, some Democrats and some Republicans.
Sure.
And how are they scoring?
We've got
Senators Thatcher and Winters and Courtney and Representatives Evans and... well, it's unfair.
He breaks out the scorecard.
Oh, yeah.
He whipped it out. You know, I actually went to the trouble of bringing our most recent voting record here. And let's see. Who do we want to look at
Evans,
first?
Please.
Let's look at Representative Evans. And
recently reelected.
Yes, recently reelected. He scored a 63%. And those are for the votes that he took.
Is that a biennium?
For 2017 and 2018.
All right. So
63%. Our kind of our rule is 70% is the threshold for at what point we'll look at you for an endorsement the next time around. So, you know, certainly there were folks, let's see, that scored as low as about in the 30% range. Mm-hmm. Some of the more probably Portland-centric legislators scored in the 30 to 38% range. So Paul Evans
is that the area that they voted, or how many times they voted?
This was scored on 8 votes that we scored, and now we took positions on many more bills than those. But these were the big ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
So who do you want to
Democrats?
Who else do you want to know about?
Thatcher. We had Senator Thatcher.
Oh, yeah.
We had Senator Winters
here. Let's look at 100% Senator Kim Thatcher.
What a surprise. Small business family, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And another small business family is Senator Winters.
Jackie Winters, 75%.
Okay. We would call her pro-business.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Okay.
And I believe both of them, Senators Thatcher and Winters, both received our endorsements the last time they were both up for re-election. I think Mr. Evans fell short just a little bit. In fact, I think we actually endorsed his challenger in this last cycle.
Well, as did I. I haven't been a huge fan. He's now my representative where I live. And I will give him some credit because the first time I saw a scorecard from him, he scored a perfect zero.
Ooh.
And it was either from the Salem Area Chamber, or I think it actually was the Oregon Chamber. And his first session, and all the bills that affected small business and the position of small business advocacy wanted, he scored a flat out zero.
Did he vote at all? Yes, he did vote.
He went the wrong way.
Oh, okay.
And he has improved. He has improved. So I at least give him that in fairness. And we have listeners. I mean, even though we follow Rush Limbaugh here on KYKN, we have a fair share of conservative talk radio.
Sure.
But we have listeners who are independents and listeners who are even Democrats to the show. And let's talk a little bit about the two caucuses. And does the NFIB have friends on both sides of the aisle?
We absolutely do. And politically, too. You know, we are a nonpartisan organization. And so, you know, I like to say that we don't choose parties or really even legislators or candidates. They choose to be with us. And so this last election cycle, we certainly endorsed quite a few Republicans who, as you know, have a reputation for being pro-business. Mm-hmm. But we actually endorsed two Democrats in this last cycle, those being Senator Betsy Johnson and Representative Catty McEwen from down in Coos Bay.
Okay, yeah. Great. Good to know. And this is my disappointment with the Democrats. Dave's looking at me like, where are you going to go?
Oh,
how deep are you going to step in it, Brent? But here's my disappointment with the Democrats. They seem to want to pay for a lot of things, but they oppose things that would create the revenue to accomplish it. So we'll talk about the former governor because he can't defend himself. So just kidding. We're going to talk about the current governor in the next segment. But Kitzhaber had a large public policy drive for healthcare. Mm-hmm. And for education, even pre-K. That's really great. But nowhere in his platform was there, we need to promote small business. We need to promote business growth because business employs people and that pays taxes and that's how we pay for what we want. So they have all the public policy agendas, and the agenda is to raise taxes to get them instead of elevating the state's economic footprint, as it were, be it from utilizing our state forests or the water in the Columbia or just even be less restrictive. Is that okay? I'm soapbox a little bit, but is that resonating with you? It's like,
yes,
that's my problem with the Democrats. Hey, okay, if you want to pay for pre-K and kindergarten for everybody, and blah, 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 that's fine, but don't think that you also have to vote against everything that's pro-business, because business creates income taxes and that's how we pay for everything.
You're exactly right about that point that you just said. It's taxable income, so you know, if you can be as pro-tax as you want to be, but you have to have something to tax. And so, mm-hmm. if you don't have taxable income, you know, people out there building wealth, growing wealth, creating jobs, you know, the private sector is the wealth producing engine of our economy. If we are all government or nonprofits, as good of the work as everybody does in those fields, there wouldn't be anything to tax. And so you have to have a healthy, robust private sector economy producing that wealth in order to have something to tax in the first place.
Amen. People that are making money are not the enemy. All right. So we're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit about the I don't even know if we're going to fit everything in. You may have to come back in a week.
Happy to do it.
We're talking to Anthony Smith of NFIB about small business advocacy in Oregon. We're going to talk about the governor's speech, the governor's budget, and the legislative session coming up. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. Gosh, I wish we didn't have to have commercials in there. We just had one of the best three-minute conversations there. The facts of life when it comes to radio is we got to pay the bills, we got to keep the lights on, and we need to pay for broadcasting. So thank you for sticking with us through the break. We've got Anthony Smith from NFIB with us here in studio with Brent and Dave. And boy, we're talking about the things that happened in the Capitol and the brick walls that you beat your head up against, and even just a mindset of realizing how much local businesses do to support nonprofits, to support the community, and all these things. And it doesn't really have to go through the hopper. It doesn't have to first to go into the governor's budget and then get doled back out. So anyway, all right, let's talk a little bit about the governor's speech, because she starts off pretty well saying,
yeah.
hey, there's some good things in the economy, which is true. Unemployment is down and some revenues are up and this and that. Where was the real substance in the speech?
Well, so first off, I think it's appropriate to say that there's a lot of the things that she talked about yesterday in her inaugural address that I think we and a lot of our members would agree with. You know, she mentioned things like, you know, housing and healthcare and some other issues. You know, campaign finance reform. There are issues that are certainly important issues to talk about. I think what was possibly a little disappointing to me personally was we're not campaigning anymore. She won re-election in November. She released her budget, her proposed mm-hmm. budget, governor's budget. They do that, you know, every 2 years. Shortly thereafter, and there was plans in there of, you know, here's what I'm proposing to for the state to spend for the next biennium, and then also challenged the legislature in that budget, somewhat unusually, to come up with another $2 billion in additional revenue to fund some education initiatives.
Anthony, I think you stuttered right there. did you say million or billion?
I said 2 billion with a B.
Of new revenue.
Ooh. On top of the fact that we have more revenue coming into the state than we've ever had in the history of the state. And so what I was looking for yesterday from her was some details. If there were any, if she had any ideas about where we're going to get that money from, that's what I was hoping to see, is what's the plan for, mm-hmm. Because that wasn't in the budget that she released in December. And unfortunately, she didn't elaborate on that. She talked a lot about, in similar to what she did on the campaign trail, she talked a lot about some of the things that we would like to see, better stewardship of tax dollars, more funding going into the classroom, all the things that sound really great. And for the most part, I think most people agree on things like that. But money doesn't grow on trees. People don't just say that. Mm-hmm. You can't just make money appear out of nowhere. You're going to have to go to somebody and say, I need a little bit more. Government needs a little bit more from you so that we can do these things that we all agree are great, but we need you to pay a little bit more. And so that's what I was looking for as a person who advocates for small businesses. Mm-hmm. I was looking, where are we talking? If we're talking about $2 billion, again, with a B, of new revenue that's coming in on top of the record revenues that we already have, that's what I was looking for, was a little bit more information about where we're going to be getting that $2 billion from.
Well, that's understandable. Because I think everyone who's listening is going to, that's reaching into their pocketbook.
Right, exactly. Well, as a business too, or as a homeowner or anything like that, why do they always come up with a budget that is asking for so much more? I mean, why do they do that? Why don't they stick with a budget that, the state has this much money, that's what they have to deal with?
Yeah, and let me just put that in perspective for you, because her budget proposal for the 1921 biennium, as it's called, the next two-year budget, is for $23.6 billion in general fund and lottery dollars. Okay, let me put that in perspective. In the 2013-2015 biennium, our state budget was $16.7 billion.
Oh, time out. All right. 13 to 15, was 16 billion?
$16.7 billion in the 13-15 biennium.
13 to 15. So now we're talking 1920?
We're talking 1921.
19 to 21.
Yep.
So instead of $16 billion, $26 billion, more billion dollars.
Our two-year state budgets went from $16.7 billion to $19 billion to $21.1 billion, and now we're proposing $23.6 billion. But that doesn't include that additional $2 billion that I was just talking about. If the legislature does come up with a package for education for $2 billion, then we're looking at a total general fund lottery dollar budget of $25.6 billion. Again, that's nearly $10 billion. Well, exactly $9 billion more than we were in that 2013-2015 biennium.
Because I don't like to get angry on air, but you're really making me mad.
You should see him.
And you know what? I am far from many of my friends who are anti-tax advocates. Right? I'm not on that far end of the spectrum. But I'm really mad about all the talk. I mean, why is our education system failing?
Right. Right.
Well, I think gets people very frustrated is we have all this record revenue coming in and budgets increasing, by billions of dollars every 2 years. And then at the local level, we're still hearing about, cuts to teachers and larger class sizes. And that doesn't square with people's brains about how can we have more money than we've ever had in the history of the state and still be laying off teachers or, our kids are having these enormous class sizes.
And sharing books.
Yeah. And really what it comes down to is there were decisions made in the past that the bills do.
All right. So you're talking about PERS.
Yeah, PERS is one of those things. We've, you know, there's...
How come they can't fix that?
Well, you know, they've
that's
tried.
Story.
I know you could do another, a whole. You could do a whole show
another,
on PERS.
I know it's another show, but we've been talking about that for a long, long time.
Yep.
And there should have been steps done many years ago to correct that.
And partially, they have done some of that work. You know, as recently as the beginning of this decade, you know, we passed some PERS reforms, and then, you know, they went up to the Oregon Supreme Court level, and some of those reforms were thrown out. So, but it's not just
what?
PERS. It's you know, it's healthcare costs too. You know, we are a Medicaid expansion state, Oregon. So we decided as a state that we were going to expand our Medicaid population, commonly known as the Oregon Health Plan here in Oregon. And we were going to get a whole lot of people who weren't covered. And before Medicaid expansion, we were about 600,000 folks on Medicaid or the Oregon Health Plan. And today it's over 1 million Oregonians. We have 4 million in the state. So we're about 25% of our population is on the Oregon Health Plan. And we decided as a state that we were going to do that. We voted on that for Measure 101. It was that special election.
I remember that.
About a year ago now. And so Oregonians said that they wanted to you know, fund Medicaid. But we've always known when we first expanded our Medicaid population, the federal government said, well, if you expand your Medicaid population, here's this free money from the government that is going to cover the entire cost of that expansion. Well, we knew when we took that deal that eventually we were going to have to pay a portion of it. And now in this biennial budget is that time when we're on the hook for paying the full amount that we will have to pay, which is about 10% of the bill.
Sounds a lot like one of the cable deals or one of the...
Right.
The telephone deals.
Yeah, my other problem, though, is that everybody says, here's free money from the federal government. That is not free money. That is everyone's money.
Yeah, and you'll have to work into paying for it yourself, and now they're trying to find a way to do that.
Right.
Okay. So why I got angry is we hear too much about cuts. We'll have to cut this, and there's not enough in this shortfall,
right,
when we've got $10 billion more than we had just a couple sessions ago. And that just seems so disingenuous, and that's why we don't trust the legislature. It's why we don't trust the news. It's why we don't trust what the state is telling us. When, like, we know you have more money. Don't tell us that you have to cut.
Yeah, or not be able to pave roads when they have so much more money.
And PERS, well, we're going to set that aside. But you know,
that's another show.
Hey, I'd almost like to see a tax where we pay one time $2 billion and you just do away with PERS and stop whining about it.
Well, but PERS is a $22 billion issue. So,
Anthony, stop.
Yeah. But you know, we're going to figure it out.
What's really scary is Oregon's doing better than a lot of other states.
That's true.
That's true.
And you know, as hard as it is to be an optimist in this business, I am an optimist, and I just can't help it. And I think we are going to figure it out. I don't think there's a silver bullet, but I think that we're going to figure it out. And we're going to take care of our public employees, and we're going to, you know, stop making promises that we can't keep, because we've learned our lesson on that. I think is that you know, when they were making promises, and you know, huge return rates, guaranteed returns, when the market wasn't doing well, you know, that's just not feasible. So I think we've learned our lesson, and I think going forward we're going to make some positive changes, but it's going to be hard for a little while, and we have to pay the bill.
Yeah, one of the changes, I guess so many things to get to. One of the changes might be to hire out and privatize some of the services the government does. So if the city takes on a role, and it might be a good role, we want them to do it, but for their employees, they have to pay an extraordinary percentage to support PERS and for healthcare and so forth. But if you privatize it and send it out to a private employer, the base cost of those services is lower. Sometimes you can save money and you're keeping money in the private sector.
True.
So the private sector can do it cheaper, faster, more efficient, and so forth. So I would like to see some of that, more privatization, and that because every time you have an employee who is not on PERS, then that lessens the liability that they have and so forth.
Well, speaking of procurement, that, you know, one of the things I just wrote about in an article I wrote for Salem Business Journal is the tale of two governing philosophies between the governor's office and our Secretary of State, Dennis Richardson, because the Secretary of State just last month came out with a report that showed that if the state went to an e-procurement system that kind of housed all of the things that the state buys, that we could save up to $1.6 billion in this next budget cycle. And now if we're talking about, you know, adding 10 days on to the school calendar for our school statewide, which carries a cost of $500 million, you know, that pays for that and then some. So, you know, yes, I think a lot of small businesses would like to be part of mm-hmm. the solution of providing a service to, you know, a local government or a state government through that procurement process, save, you know, do some business for them and then also save the state some money. But we can do that more efficiently, the report said. And actually, the governor actually mentioned this in her inaugural address, is that we need to streamline that. We need to get that going immediately to find those cost savings.
All right. We're talking about NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business Advocacy for Business. Anthony Smith is the Oregon director. Real quick before we go to break, I want to talk about who are your business advocacy partners? Who else is towing the same rope and trying to help the independent businesses in Oregon, you know, got a living and not get overburdened with regulation?
That is a great question, because it's a question that I also have to, you know, answer to often from our own members, is who do you work with and who else can we trust? What I always say is you should be a member of your local chamber. You should be a member of your industry specific trade organization, and you should be a member of NFIB, because we all do different things, but politics and public policy work is a team sport. And you have to try to get as much representation as you can, especially when you're the little guy who, as we were talking about before, maybe can't afford to, you know, hire someone to exclusively represent you. So who do we work with, you know, on a regular basis? Well, you know, we have a lot of members who are in construction. So, you know, we are often talking with the Home Builders Association. We're often talking with Associated General Contractors. We have a lot of restaurants. So the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. We have farmers. So the Farm Bureau. We're talking with other general business organizations like Oregon Business and Industry. So, you know, we have a lot of partners out there and a lot of cross membership, really, mm-hmm. because, okay. you know, if you're a farmer, you're probably going to be a member of your Farm Bureau. But we also would love to have you as a member of NFIB, because there you get also mm-hmm. that state and federal representation. You know, the local chamber, they're going to go and fight for you at the city level, maybe even the county level. But we can't be all things to all people. And so being, you know, taking the issues that we're really is our bread and butter issues for a critical mass of our membership. Again, like I said, we have mm-hmm. over 6,000 members in the state. So we stick to those general business issues that aren't necessarily the specialty of your industry specific yeah. trade association.
Yeah, because I've been critical in sounding the alarm and about having a supermajority of Democrats in the legislature whose primary, it seems to be their primary public policy goal, is whatever the unions, the public employee unions, want to do. And they're very good at locking arms and walking in step together and raising money. So that is a concern. I don't think public policy in Oregon should be driven by the agenda of the public employee unions, and they're better at it than your side. So the fact that you work together with other trade associations is the only way to get it done. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Now back to Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires in the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We're talking about local issues that affect your pocketbook, your quality of life, and everything else, your noon hour. And this hour, we're all fired up because we're talking about small business and how it interacts with public policy in the state and the powers that be in the legislature. In the studio with us is Anthony Smith from NFIB. A couple of things I want to clarify about NFIB before I ask you to try to describe what it's going to be like playing defense in the Capitol. By the way, Anthony does live in Salem, was educated in Oregon State, has his wife here and a home here in town. So thank you for being
baby
a part.
On the way, too.
First baby
on the way.
Oh, wow.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Very, very exciting. He's putting down roots. Okay, so NFIB, we talked about how 90% of its members have 25 or fewer employees. So do you have people on the anti-business end of the political spectrum try to throw you shade that, you know, you represent Walmart and, you know, Royal Dutch Shell, and that's not really what it's all about, is it?
Well, yeah, not really. Mm-hmm. They know that we're the small business organization, but I do think that there's this perception that if if you own a small business that you must be a millionaire or a billionaire.
And
let me just read this statistic, because this is just incredible. This is from the U.S. Small Business Administration. This is their 2018 Small Business Profile. They do this for every state. And listen to this. The median income for individuals self-employed at their own incorporated businesses in Oregon was $45,522 a year.
Wow.
So that means half of people who run their own businesses, half of the self-employed in our state, are making more than that. But that means half of them are making less than $45,522 a year. Not exactly millionaires and billionaires here. So that's something I can't overstate the importance of that figure, because when we're talking about how policy affects the budgets, the home budgets, the household budgets,
sure,
but also the operating budgets of a small business, we're talking about you know, income for that person. That's their job. Running a business is their job, and that's how they support their families. And so, you know, this figure is significantly lower than the national average. I think the national average is around 49,000, 50,000.
Wow.
So just something to put in perspective. It's not every small business owner out there is a millionaire or billionaire, and few are, really.
All right. So then those people, they likely left a job that paid, right? And they paid a wage, and they were hired, and they have a job. And then they take a risk, and it may risk the house. They may risk the loans and everything else, the bankruptcies, you know, theft, and all these things to make basically the equivalent of $20 an hour.
Right? What's the average small business that fails?
Oh, boy. I mean, in terms of size or how often it happens?
Yeah, how often?
You know, I don't know that
like
off the top of my head.
One in 10?
I really don't know off the top of my head. I know that they track, the government tracks startups versus closures,
mm-hmm,
but it's hard to know, I think, in the data about whether somebody goes out of business because they chose to go out of business or maybe sold their business or if they weren't profitable. But what I can tell you is that it's incredibly hard to do any long-term planning and create budgets for yourself and for your business when government keeps changing the rules.
Right.
And that's what we're up against is, you know, we were talking before about the $2 billion that the governor is proposing in additional spending, and we don't know where that's going to come from. That's something that we're going to be watching really close, because we just called a special session last year to expand a small business tax break that in her budget she's already proposed that we restrict that again in a different way, but you know, to constrict that. We're also looking at a huge cap and trade policy, climate change bill for this session that could have enormous impacts on rates that people pay for energy, not just power or you know, their gas bill, but you know, all forms of energy. And one of the things that they're going to hear from me, the legislature, over and over again as we go through this process is, you know, every small business owner, when they leave their house in the morning, they turn the thermostat down, they turn all the lights off, and then they go turn on the power to all the computers, all the lights, and everything at the office. And then they pay that bill too.
Mm-hmm.
So from the consumer perspective, it's a double whammy on the small business person, because like I said, there's household budget and then there's your business budget.
Indeed. All right, we're going to run out of time today, and I hope you'll come back, Anthony. So many things to talk about. We want to talk about the defense, the playing defense at the Capitol, because frankly, what these trade associations do more than anything is create an out so the bad ideas die. You know, you need to be out there actively fighting so bad ideas die. But there's a lot of misconception out in the public about how taxes get paid from those small businesses you're talking about. They're making $45,000 a year because they may show up as personal income taxes paid if
That's
it's a
right.
small business. And so there's a lot of, I want to say, it is a lie. It's a lie because some people are just doing it on purpose, saying what's, then the whole conversation about fair share and how regulations affect small business and those things that you have to battle. So cap and trade, every
yep.
single person listening right now, you should anticipate if the bill passes, your energy costs will go up. Money will come out of your wallet.
Yep.
Thank you for being with us here on Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires, live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.